Colonel Chaplin, Reel 5.
We were allowed to travel to England on troop ships, and this I did. I spent a perfectly ordinary leave in England, seeing my family and thoroughly enjoying myself. In India, I also had two very good leaves in Kashmir. We used to go up to Kashmir to Nagin Bagh, where you lived on a houseboat for a matter of about a week. And then you'd go off fishing for trout for something like another week to 10 days, then back to Nagin Bagh for 2 or 3 days, then back fishing and so on. So you'd beat it up on Nagin Bagh, having a very pleasant time, and then go and have peaceful and very exciting fishing for the next few days and so on, all through. There were also, of course, the odd shooting trips that one did. I shot Urial, which a type of mountain goat, from Quetta. One did quite a lot of duck shooting and partridge shooting, and there again you sometimes took a long weekend, long weekend being from Thursday, which was half holiday anyway, round to Sunday night. You could, of course, go and do bigger game shooting, tiger shooting and so on, which I personally didn't do. But I think those are the main ways in which one spent one's leave. I did go down on one occasion and stay with my sister and brother-in-law in Bangalore, merely really to see what that part of India was like, and it's the most pleasant part of the world.
When you went back to England, how long was your leave?
When you were on the frontier, you were entitled to 3 months' leave. If you were not on the frontier, you only had 2 months.
And how did you go back home? By what method of transport?
I did say that I went in a troop ship.
Uh-huh. Did you see much of India outside the cantonments whilst you were stationed there?
Apart from visits to places like Delhi, looking at the sites of Delhi and Agra and the Taj Mahal, and as I say, of Kashmir, I didn't really see very much. For the war, when we first went to Japan, when we first went to Burma, I travelled to Madras, and we left from Madras, and then after Imphal, I came back and saw Calcutta on 2 occasions. So I've had a pretty good view all around India, and Chittagong as well was one of the places we visited. But it's always been rather inclined to be in the army, either in the cantonment or in an army job of sorts.
Which station did you prefer in India?
I think perhaps Peshawar was my favourite station. Peshawar, because it provided everything that I wanted. There was the hunting, there was polo. It was a very comfortable place to be in. We had a very nice mess quarters with pull the plug instead of thunder boxes. It was really quite civilized, Peshawar. A very nice club, very good swimming bath.
By pull the plug, you mean flush lavatories?
Yes.
And was there any station which you didn't like?
No, I don't think so. I think the station isn't the main part of soldiering. It's your battery, or your men and your animals and yourself, and you can be just as happy in lying on the ground as you are in a palace, really. I think it's always a bonus when you get nice, when you had nice surroundings and quarters and so on. And of course, some of the places were pretty unpleasant in the hot weather. Peshawar could be very hot in the hot weather. But that never really worried me very much.
Did you have any preference for any particular section of the Indian population? Or did you have no preferences at all?
Yes, I think my favourite Indian, from having served with them, was the Punjabi Musalman. Although I started by commanding a Sikh section, the batteries I commanded were a mixture of Sikhs and PMs. And I finally commanded a regiment which was all PM. And I think the people I liked best of the lot were the PMs. The Sikhs were rather inclined to be a bit tricky at times. They tended to be rather devious. The PM was far more straightforward. The Sikh was brilliant at times, but could misbehave. But the PM was not quite so brilliant, but far more steady, I think.
By brilliant, do you mean quickness of mind, or do you mean as a soldier?
From every point of view, in hockey, they sometimes played magnificently, and then something would upset them, and they wouldn't do quite so well. With the PM, you knew that if he was quite good, he'd always be quite good. He wouldn't let you down in any way.
So there was this difference in temperament. You found the Sikh rather more temperamental than the Punjabi Musalman.
Yes. And he was rather inclined to be a bit of an intriguer, the Sikh, more than the PM. And of course I liked the Gurkha very much indeed, but I didn't have them under my command. I've got more respect for the Gurkha as a fighter than anybody, having fought in Burma with them the whole time. I have no doubts that they were the best Indian fighters that we had.
Was it the professionalism of their soldiering which was impressive in the case of the Gurkha?
Partly that, but partly their complete guts. In some ways, they're not unlike the Japanese. If you told a Gurkha to stay in a certain place and do something, he'd jolly well do it till he died. The Jap, of course, was famous for that. The Gurkha was far better at that side of it than any other soldier I met. I remember one, as a slight example, they were also very rigid in their regulations and the way they behaved and so on. They always followed regulations very closely. I remember in the Fort Sandeman mess on one occasion, I was just going into the mess, and there was a Gurkha standing there holding his shoulder, which was absolutely covered in blood. And I said to him, what did he say? I'm looking for the orderly officer. And I said, what happened? He said, it's a Kukri, presumably one of his friends or one of the other soldiers. And I said, come on, I'll take you straight off to the MI room and get you fixed up. And he said, no, I have to report to the orderly officer. I said, don't be silly, come on, we must get along, we must attend to this wound quickly. But he wouldn't have it, and I had to get the orderly officer for him. He reported to the orderly officer, and then he passed out. They'd cut right through his collarbone. The Kukri had cut right through his collarbone, and he was holding his arm up with that other hand.
Holding his arm on.
Yeah. Incredible people from that point of view. Courage and determination. And this sticking to orders.
And so this had been some kind of squabble, had it, between two
girls? Yes, they'd had a fight.
What did you feel about the Baluchis, or did you not have enough contact with them to be able to form an opinion?
Not really, no. One met them. You met them on the road. You talked to them if they could understand Urdu. One wasn't really in a position to form an opinion either way of them. I'm quite certain that they would have been very tricky customers. They are Pathans, or really very much like the Pathans, and they I'm sure would have given us a lot of trouble if they'd been going for us, which they didn't happen to be at the time.
How much of the local towns did you see and use in places like Quetta and Peshawar? Did you go into the local towns, or were you advised to keep out?
No, we were not advised to keep out. One went into them very little because there was very little to do. I mean, I used to go down occasionally to the bazaar in Peshawar, for instance. In Quetta there was no point because there was nothing there after the earthquake. But in Peshawar I used to go down to the bazaar, and sometimes particularly to buy something which I couldn't get anywhere else, or just to have a look round, and perhaps talk to some people, but... there wasn't much of it. You didn't do it very much. I mean, most things that you wanted, you didn't have to do much shopping, as I say, because your bearer did most of it for you.
Did you buy any things in India to bring home in the way of curios or handicrafts, anything of that?
Well, the only things that I bought were Persian carpets, which cover the floors of my house now, but and which were really rather incredible for the sort of price that one paid for them in those days. I've got a Baluch rug. Unfortunately, one of my dogs ate a hole in it, but it's a very ordinary Baluch rug, rather on the Bukhara type. Which I bought off a man. I've got a photograph of him carrying it in Fort Sandeman for 15 rupees.
So a lot less than a pound. Or about a pound.
About a pound, yes. Which is still a good rug. This was in 1936.
And what kind of size was it?
It's, 4 foot by 7, something like that. An ordinary red and blue type rug, red and dark blue type rug. But funnily enough, we had in Quetta and Peshawar, people who used to come through from Afghanistan, who we knew as Pawindas. Now, they used to travel all the way down to Australia selling rugs and odd things. They used to travel by camel ox and all sorts of things, right down, presumably, to Bombay, and then they'd get on boats and go on to Australia. A few of them. The rest would wait for them to come back. And then they'd sell their wares in Australia. And I was riding through a Pawinda camp, which was astride the track that I was normally used to ride out along, one morning, and in all these Buinder camps, you had the women were normally about, and you'd always been told to be very careful not to look at them or have anything to do with them. So I was just riding through, not thinking of anything, and suddenly a voice from one of the tents, a girl sitting outside, said, "Good morning." And I sort of turned round, and it turned out that she was an Australian girl who'd married one of these Buinder merchants, and she was living their life. I never saw her again, and bade her good day, and that was the end of that.
But you stopped to have a word with her?
Yes, just enough to find out what she was. And I don't suppose it would have applied in quite the same way, that they wouldn't have cut my throat for talking to her, but they would certainly have done it if I'd tried to talk to one of their own women.
Who was it who warned you not to speak to the women?
Well, it was always your commanding officers, your battery commanders. One passed these things on, but the person who taught me most was Colonel Farron, who had been my battery commander, then my regimental commander, then commander of the MATC, and he used to give me a lot of individual talks, but he used to give actual lectures to officers on things they must and must not do and so on.
Before they went to India?
No, when they arrived in India, when they arrived in his regiment.
Did you ever feel uneasy as you went about outside the cantonment?
No. I can never say I felt in any way uneasy. Mind you, one didn't go where you knew you were going to be uneasy. There were certain parts of Peshawar that you were told you were not to go to.
What were they?
Well, there were just certain areas where I wasn't quite sure whether things were all right or not. And of course, you wouldn't have dreamt of going out too far in places like Banu or Wana and so on. A great friend of mine was playing polo, I think it was at Banu. He was practicing polo with a stick one day, just on the edge of the cantonment, or on the edge of the area. And he had a rifle shot through his saddle. So one had to be pretty careful in those particular areas. But in the ordinary cantonments, there was no problem.
What was the demeanour of the Indian population towards you as an army officer as you went about? Did they ignore you or did they show any particular reaction?
In the main, respectful. I mean, for instance, in most places, an Indian would not go past with his umbrella up when you were walking past him. And the same way that servants were very careful about taking their shoes off before they came in the bungalow and so on, anybody who came to see you would tend to do the same. That, of course, is not necessarily respect to you, it's respect to your house. I'd say it was respectful, and it could be very friendly if you passed the time of day with them in their own language and you got engaged in conversation and you cracked a joke or two. It was really quite a very friendly atmosphere. I think at times they tended to resent the British soldier a bit. But then he was in uniform, you see. We used to be in civilian clothes when we went out into the bazaar or anywhere.
Did you ever make any Indian friends to whose houses you would go for social visits?
Yes. One typical example was a person who was recently retired from the Indian Army as a very senior general, who was at the shop just senior to me at Woolwich. He's always been a very great friend. In fact, when I was in Aden about 10 years ago, he came out with the from the Yemen with the United Nations team that went there to see how things were getting on, and he came and spent 2 or 3 days with us in Aden. There were officers, Indian officers. I don't mean Indian officers. The person we called Indian officer was a viceroy's commissioned officer. There were British officers and viceroy's commissioned officers. But there were many Indians who were British officers. In other words, they were
King's
commissioned officers. And in the 16th Cavalry, we played a lot of polo with the 16th. There were lots of people like that who were great friends of mine. We had a political agent in Fort Sandeman who was an Indian, who was also very good to us. He was rather senior to us, but he was very good to us. I'm talking about the battery. Yes, there were quite a few people. Later on, I went to the Staff College in Quetta. This was well after the war. And, of course, met a lot of them again. They were by then becoming quite senior officers.
When you visited the homes of such Indians, were there any problems with mixing with them because of the different social attitudes of the two nationalities?
No, because that type of person were very sophisticated and very European in outlook anywhere. There was no problem at all.
So did you mix with their families as well?
Oh, yes, yes. Not with your Viceroy's Commissioned Officers' families, because in the main they were kept separate completely. In fact, I never met any wives of any of my Indian officers. But where they were on the same status as ourselves, if it was a case of being invited to their homes, it was exactly as if they were coming to your home. There were some of them even then who didn't invite you. But they weren't really my people I was friendly with anyway, so it didn't affect me.
Did you enjoy your time in India as a soldier?
I loved every moment of it. I would have gone on serving in India forever if I'd been allowed to.
What made it so much better than soldiering somewhere else? The sport?
The sport, I think, was one of the great things, but the responsibility. As a very young man, as a young subaltern, you had a section of artillery and you got on with the job, that was your section, you produced it by a certain date, trained to a certain degree. Well, that never seems to happen, certainly it doesn't happen nowadays, and it didn't seem to happen very much in other stations, even in those days. Then, of course, there was always this question of the chance of active service of a sort on the frontier. It had a lot to offer. And of course, when you think of the sport that you could do, you could pig stick, you could play polo, you could hunt, you could race, you could shoot practically anything that is shootable. And of course, you had your games of the men as well. So I think it was mostly the sport and the responsibility that made it more exciting. And of course, the pay to a certain extent too, because we were well paid with Indian troops.
Was the pay of a British officer with Indian troops different to that of a British officer with British troops?
Oh yes, very much so.
Why was there a difference?
Well, merely because we were dealing with Indian troops. I don't know why, but it was Indian army as opposed. Although Mount and Artillery were not Indian army, we were British. British army seconded, which was the best of both worlds, because it meant that we had all the advantages of the Indian army while we were there, and whenever we wanted, we could come back home and serve as British army again, you see. But the Indian army officer couldn't necessarily do that. A lot of them did. A lot of them at the end of the war came back and joined British regiments. In fact, a lot of them joined the artillery after the war.
So the officer with the Indian army was better paid than the officer with the British army?
Yeah.
Did you meet many white people in India who were not army people?
Not all that number, no. You met in whatever cantonment you happened to be, you met the government staff. For instance, in Peshawar, there was the governor himself and his own staff. You had, in different places, political agents. You had people called collectors. All these were very thin on the ground. There weren't many to meet in any case, but you did meet just a few. I mean, you were always invited out to parties, the same as your mess invited them back to parties and so on. The political people.
Were you a member of any clubs in India?
Well, you became a member of whatever club you happened to be in. The station you happen to be in. I was a member of the Quetta Club, I was a member of the Peshawar Club, the Ambala Club, and so on.
So was it an invariable rule for the British officer in India to join the local club?
Yeah. While we're on that, in Peshawar itself there was a bit of trouble because, as you've said, it was the invariable rule for British officers to join the club. And the 16th Cavalry were the first Indian regiment to be Indianized. In other words, to have Indian officers with them. And they had a colonel who was an Australian, and he came to Peshawar with his regiment. They were not allowed to join the club because they were Indians. And he said, all right, if we're not allowed to join the club, we don't play polo, we don't hunt, we don't lend horses to anybody, we have nothing to do with the rest of the cantonment. And eventually they changed the rule and they all joined the club. Initially, a lot of things like that were really rather silly. There were attitudes taken by blimpish old army officers who couldn't foresee the future and the change over to Indians taking over.
What do you think the rationale behind it was?
Well, I just think that they thought that they were the only people who could govern India, and they didn't think the Indians would ever be capable of doing it.
But what was the rationale behind keeping them out of the clubs?
Merely that the rules were that clubs were only open to British.
So it was just based on prejudice?
Yes.
Rather than any particular reason?
Yeah.
The few European civilians that you did meet in India, what did you and the other army officers think of them? Was there any particular army attitude towards civilians?
There wasn't, particularly to the ones that we met on the frontier and in places like that. But there was a very decided one to the people that you met in Bombay and Madras and Calcutta and so on. And they were called boxwallers. And they were looked down upon as tradesmen. But this was, I suppose, an attitude which existed everywhere at one time, that a tradesman was rather low being. But it certainly continued in India, and you very often heard people saying, oh, he's only a Boxwala. The only Boxwalas as such that one had in cantonments were your bank managers. But there again, on the whole, they were very good chaps. That they used to send particularly good ones up to places like Peshawar and so on, and they joined in everything in the ordinary way. But I think in a place like Bombay, there was definitely very much that attitude.
We just come to the end of this, really.